Now we go to the house of Brian Dobson. Hello, Brian.
Good afternoon, Ray.
See, you never say that, you see. You never say that on Morning Ireland or the News at One. It's all sort of, oh, look at us, we're talking to each other.
We're all very proper. Now, here I am sitting in the, actually, we call it the dining room, but we haven't dined in here for years. But anyway, that's what it's called, at my table, where, yes, I've done some broadcasting over the pandemic, all right, as well.
Right, okay. Yeah. You feel very comfortable there anyway, don't you, Brian?
I have had my cup of coffee now, and I've got my computer in front of me just to keep tabs on these US election results coming in. Yeah. And I think when a little bit later, if it stays dry, I'll go for a little stroll. So, I'm happy out. My weekend has started. So yeah. That's good.
And the change in your routine, because you were doing Morning Ireland, which is a very early start.
Yes.
And now a lot more civilised. You're doing the lunch. Is that, are you benefiting from that?
Yeah, my sleep routine has certainly improved. All right, yeah. Half past four in the morning is not good for my metabolism. Anyway, I don't know about anybody else's. So, I suppose I have a few extra hours. But it's not that. It's a similar job. It's about reporting the news, trying to get people to come on the program to talk to us, trying to make sense of all these crazy things that are going on.
Yeah, so. But looking at your career, and I suppose. People were a bit surprised, were they, when you left 6-1 and went to radio. And I suppose people outside and people who weren't inside your head, more importantly, might have seen that as a bit of a, a demotion.
Yeah, well, no, I didn't see it like that.
No,
I've been kind of looking to do something different. I was 20 plus 25 years, something like that, between the 6 o'clock and the 9 o'clock. So I really thought it was time for a change.
Yeah.
And so when Morning Ireland popped up on the radar and the opportunity was there, I said, well, actually, my wife said to me, why don't you do it? Do something different. Give yourself a shake-up.
Right.
And I never argue with my wife. It was good, sensible advice. And I had been sort of looking for it. So I was delighted to get a change and do something just a bit different,
So was your first love or your first relationship with radio or both?
Certainly the first relationship. I started off in broadcasting. I started off... like a few people of my generation, not everyone, but a few of us started off in pirate radio.
Mm.
And that was a long, long time ago, long before we had commercial licensed radio, local radio, all the wonderful services that are available around the country now. So there was RTE and there was pirate radio. So I started off working in pirate radio many, many years ago. And that's where I got my start.
And was it a love affair? And was that an itch you had to scratch to go back to radio?
Yeah, I think. Well, I suppose my first love is journalism and reporting, and that really is whether I'm doing it on radio or television. And I've never really done any written journalism, but I just love having a good story to tell. And that I suppose was the passion at the outset. I was never a DJ, Ray. I never did any of that kind of broadcasting. And it ain't going to happen now. That really, I suppose, it was the opportunity to work in broadcast journalism at that stage that really, and radio was the opportunity that was there. And I worked then in the BBC in Belfast, Radio Ulster, for a number of years, doing sort of more or less what I'm doing again now. I was happy out. I mean, that was a great opportunity. I'll tell you the great thing about that is I left home. I had to go and get myself a flat. I had to do all the sort of, learn the domestic skills, or at least the basic ones. So that was a good experience as well.
Yeah.
And I was up there for 3 or 4 years. And that was really fascinating because it was in the early 80s in Belfast. The story was a major international story. But then there was also all the local news as well we were covering. So it was a tremendous grounding. I look upon it as my kind of university, if you like, those few years. Yeah,
because you can study communications and all that, but until such time as you actually do it, you're not really learning.
Yeah. You learn by doing in this business, no question about it.
So talk to me a little bit about broadcasting from home, because I've never done it, actually.
I'm not recommending it. It's kind of strange. I like being in the office, in the newsroom. I like talking to colleagues, discussing ideas, shooting the breeze about stuff. I think that's where, some of our best ideas come from those kind of exchanges, and you miss that. You try and replicate it with a WhatsApp group or a phone call or whatever, but you can't really get that sort of real engagement going with the people you're working with. And journalism is a team business. A lot of the time you need the team, if you're a presenter, to say, no, don't do that. Don't go there.
Yeah.
Don't ask that question.
Yeah.
And they save you from yourself. That's the other thing. I feel a bit sort of vulnerable at home because there's nobody looking at me, giving me that look that says, no, Brian, don't do that.
Because when you're hanging around with the team, you say something out loud, and then they go, "Are you going to say that on air?"
Yeah, and that's often.
No, never, no, never intended to say that. No, 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 no. But you don't have those checks and balances. Yeah, you don't have those checks.
I miss that. Yeah, but I suppose it is nice to be able to just go down the kitchen and get a cup of coffee.
That's and when Audrey's doing an interview, you can go to the loo, I suppose.
with the radio on, just in case they suddenly say back to Brian. Yeah, exactly. No, I haven't been caught out on that yet. And of course, the news at one, which mostly I've been doing in the studio, there's only you. So as a presenter, so you're kind of there.
And
for
how
the
is that? Because
minutes.
You know, because there is no downtime. You're on all the time.
Yeah, though I was a little more anxious about that when we did it. We did it really to sort of just be sure that we could do it for at the outset anyway.
Yeah.
And I was a little more nervous because there's no if you two presenters, obviously if something goes wrong,
down,
the other one can pick up.
Yes,
and for the most part during the pandemic, we've had one presenter at least in the Morning Ireland studio, so there is there's a fallback. When you're doing it at home on News at One, it's just you, you know, in your remote location. And if the link goes down, or you know, if there's some sort of a problem, you know, there's no fallback. So that's a little unsettling.
So I don't think things are going to change forever as a result of this. When it comes to current affairs, everyone will always want to be in RT at base.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't speak for other people, but a lot of our reporters now are out on the road and anyway, whether you know, pandemic or no pandemic. I had a former boss who, when somebody complained about not having a desk, said, "You shouldn't be at a desk. You should be out finding stories, getting news. Right. We're just sitting around here, you know, looking." And I did a bit of journalism lecturing a few years ago in the University of Limerick, where I was an adjunct professor, no less.
Excuse me.
And,
look at you.
Adjunct means unpaid.
So anyway,
but
it was
a great experience. But one of the things that some of the staff there said, asked me to emphasise, was the importance of underlining for trainee reporters that you've got to talk to people. You've really got to get out there or on the phone or whatever it is, and find out what people think and what they're doing and what's happening. That, you know, the internet is not actually really a source of the kind of proper news gathering.
No. And in that role as unpaid lecturer, Brian, you obviously had to, you know, formulate your thoughts on the changing face of the media and how it's changing because of social media and all that sort of thing. Where do you think it's at?
Well, actually, that's what was really fascinating about those few years, because if you're going to engage with students and try and give them some benefit of your experience, you have to sort of process it yourself. And I think a lot of what we do in journalism is it's unthinking, in the sense we do it automatically. We've just always done it. You know, well, we know what a news story is. You know, we know what's important and what matters and what makes an engaging piece of journalism. But often to explain it is very, very difficult. So it was a kind of useful exercise that. Well, of course, the other thing is I was confronting, you know, a lecture theatre or a room full of, you know, 20-somethings who maybe don't listen much to radio or watch television. They get their news, like my children or, you know, young adults now, from their phone, from online services. So all of that, of course, has changed. The news cycle is, you know, measurably faster than it was.
Yeah.
Stories, you know, appear and disappear much more quickly because of the speed of the news cycle. And there's a lot more, obviously, diverse sources of information. It's sometimes very difficult to really establish where are the reliable sources of information. What information can you trust, and what information should you approach in a more sceptical way? Well, you should probably approach all journalism with a certain level of scepticism, or at least questioning. Yeah. You know, but I think that there are obviously profound issues of trust and believability in the way a lot of social media clearly operates. So all of those changes,
and through your experience lecturing and through the eyes of your children, what do you think about the future of traditional media, for want of a better umbrella phrase?
Well, I kind of swing backwards and forwards. You know, I think one week I'm thinking it's all going to be over, and, you know, the job that I recognise is going to disappear or vanish. And then I kind of swing back, you know, and I think, no, maybe there's a future yet for us.
Yeah.
And I mean, you look at the recent period, the pandemic, that crisis, and the way people have turned back to, you know, quote
radio,
unquote,
yes,
old
yeah.
media,
yeah.
radio, you know, newspapers or the online, you know, very often it's the online material put up by newspapers, television. So, you know, and then you think, well, maybe we have a future that, you know, when things really matter, when important information is vital, actually, to decisions that we're all making as individuals every day, where do you go to try to make sense of what's happening, to try and get facts or get information?
Here's the problem. Here's the problem, Brian. The last time there was a pandemic in the world was over 100 years ago. So we can't sort of sit around waiting for the next pandemic.
No, but I suppose what it does is it reminds people of the importance of reliable sources of information.
And maybe that shifts as well.
So, I hope we're not going to be in an endless series of pandemics. I don't think that offers as much future to anyone.
No, I'm interested to know, do you have a red light outside your dining room? How do people know you're on air?
No, I don't. Well, there's only myself and my wife Cree here, so it doesn't create any great difficulty.
Yeah, you don't have to shout.
Nobody's going to rush in.
No. I'm on air.
No, it's nice and quiet. I'm in a back room as well, so I'm away from any traffic.
Your children, you're saying, are young adults?
Yeah, they're in their well, one of them is 30 now, and the other is in their late 20s.
Right, and did you hit the 6-0, or are you hitting it soon?
I did, just under a month ago.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And was that a big thing for you?
Well, it wasn't, because we had the pandemic.
Yes,
We were level 3 at that stage, so we just had a very small, I mean, just the 4 of us family little gathering, and that was it. So, but actually, you know, I'm not unhappy about that. I'm not really one for big parties. I was quite happy to have a low-key celebration. I still feel kind of the same as I did.
That's the thing.
I'm waiting for something to happen.
I don't think it does, Brian.
No, it's a slower deterioration.
I used to see it, which was a sight to behold. I don't know why it was a sight to behold, because you're a tall man and you always wear a suit and tie. And you used to cycle in and out of RTE. So, I don't cycle like the way you do, because you cycle with your back straight. It's like you're the lord of the manor and you're cycling in, you know.
Well, I have what I would regard as a bike built for comfort, you know.
Okay.
So nice high handlebars and a well padded seat to put my well padded seat on. And I'm not one for hunching over. So I'll get there eventually. I use the gears a lot. So I'm not a speed merchant, you know. So but I haven't been cycling very much in recent times, actually.
Just because of the change of routine.
The early hours were, cycling at half 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning didn't seem like a great idea. So, and then I just kind of got a bit out of the habit, but I should really try and get back into it again.
So I'm just thinking about the newsroom in RTE. And it's, you know, because I suppose it takes a certain person to be a journalist, and particularly a news and current affairs journalist, in that you're anoraks, aren't you? This is heaven at the moment now, the US presidential election.
Yeah, and I don't think it's unique to journalists, so to be fascinated. I'm meeting a lot of people who are addicted to CNN or whatever their source is on this.
Yes,
it is, and I suppose particularly because here in Ireland we are election anoraks. You know, lots of people are. I mean, we get a lot of coverage or a lot of audience for our election coverage here, and people are used to watching a slow count, you know, hour after hour, and little shifts and following all that. So I think what's happening in the States at the moment is a bit more like an election that we'd have here than you'd normally expect, because normally in America it's all over on the day, isn't it?
They declare a winner.
The loser concedes and all the rest of it. So this kind of a process where we're focusing on the boxes that haven't been opened yet from Pittsburgh or whatever, it's you know, a lot of it you could it seems very familiar, I think, to those of us who follow Irish elections.
When you see Donald Trump saying things about the media, and then the numerous attacks he would have made over his four years in office on people sitting right in front of him. Did you feel that was an attack on your profession? You know, like he was quite nasty to people, wasn't he, in press conferences?
Yeah, I suppose I didn't take it personally. It was certainly an attack on the profession of journalism, no question about it. I mean, that's beyond doubt. And it obviously was part of a very particular strategy and set of tactics that he had, that, you know, he wanted to undermine independent commentators, you know, people who might challenge him in some way and question their motives. Because if you can question the motive of a journalist who's asking a perfectly reasonable question, you go a long way really to undermining their credibility. And so I think it was a very calculated strategy on his part. Mm. And I mean, one of the things that seems very clear about American journalism and media is just how polarized it has become, as the country has. So, you know, rather than having, as we have here and in Britain, and I mean, mostly across Europe and other parts of the world, a media that's
impartial,
kind of a shared space, if you like, you know, it creates a safe space, one hopes, for differing views, you know, to argue out the case for whatever, you know, might be the issues of the day. Instead of having that, you have, you know, these sort of isolated echo chambers.
Why do you think that's the case? Is because it's so big?
I think, well, I mean, they have a different tradition of broadcasting in America. They don't have public service broadcasting in the same way as we do. We have a tradition of public service broadcasting where we're obliged by law, by the law of the land, to be fair and objective and impartial and to give everybody a fair crack at the whip. Mm. They have a much more partisan, I've always had a much more partisan media. It's entirely commercial. It's not governed by anything like the same sort of, regulations or rules. So if you look at Fox or some of the other broadcast media, it's driven by very strong commercial imperatives. You know, they see there's an audience to be had here, so they go after it, and they shape their coverage to appeal to that particular audience.
That's Roger Ailes, wasn't it? He was the man who set up Fox News.
But there's talk now about Trump, because he's been at odds with Fox over the last couple of days, and you know, a little bit before that, and so there's talk about Trump maybe setting up his own news channel if he is out of the White House. So we'll see how that one goes.
Brian Dobson is a legend, so brilliant at his job. He's also a gentleman. I met him in Kells, County Meath, at the Kells Pink Ribbon for Breast Cancer a few years ago.
Yes,
that's Deirdre
yes.
there. There you go.
Well, that's lovely to hear from Deirdre. Yes, the Pink Ribbon was organised by actually a cousin of mine who lives in Kells and a group there as well. And it ran for a couple of years. It was very successful, and it was great to be involved. Really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Can you ask Brian if he ever... See, I love these questions, Brian. You know, you'll never get asked these anywhere else. Can you ask Brian if he ever drove an old type Volkswagen Golf? I worked in Dublin before and I thought I saw him driving past one day. I wasn't sure, though. I thought it was him. Could he put my mind to rest?
Well, I did actually. Maybe there. I did many years ago. I had a Volkswagen Jetta, which is a golf with a boot.
Yeah, boot. It's a saloon version of the.
That's right.
Of the golf,
and it went grand until we were driving one day to Belfast, and it went on fire.
Right.
And that was the end of the Jetta.
Lovely to hear Brian Dobson's interview, because he's rarely, if ever, been interviewed. Is that something, you know, are you shy or just don't put yourself out there?
No, I'm not. I mean, if I'm asked, but I do. I mean, I do. I think the caller's right. I do. I think if you do my job, you're much more comfortable asking questions than answering them.
Yeah.
So probably I sometimes maybe try and find an excuse. I'm sorry, I'm washing my hair.
Nice hair, too. Saw him once on a train. He was working away on his laptop. That's Jerry in Limerick. So if you've cited Brian Dobson around the country, text us now. What does Brian do in his downtime? Has he got a hobby? He's a real polished journalist. Always nice to listen to, says Liam.
What do I do my downtime? Well, I do.
You
read
a lot.
I'm a keen reader. My sort of physical activity when I have downtime is I like to sail boats.
Oh, do you?
And that's a great escape from all the cares of the world. And it's my happy out time. So that's really... I haven't done much this year because we've all been a bit restricted. But when I have the opportunity, it's a great escape.
I was just reading an interview you gave and you were talking about the books you're currently reading, and they're all quite heavy.
Are they
topics? Are they?
What was on the list?
I can't remember. I can read it here. Hold on now for a second.
Well, I kind of try to vary. I sort of keep a couple going at a time.
The Museum of Innocence, the bombing of Dublin's North Strand.
Oh, right.
Did they ring a bell?
That's a while back. They do, yes. Yeah, the Museum of Innocence.
Oh, no, sorry, that was an interview with Angus McGreen. No, I'm joking. Right. No, it was you, yeah.
I vary, you know, heavy and light. I mean, I like reading history because I often think the world makes more sense, you know, when you've the perspective of, you know, some decades to look back on things.
Right.
And I love a bit of crime fiction or anything like that, you know. Inspector Meg Ray, I've been reading those during the lockdown.
Right, just to escape.
So, just to escape. Yeah.
Everyone's talking about John King on CNN and his screen, his magic screen. Have you been watching him?
Yeah, I've seen little bits of it, all right. But I mean, I've watched him over many years. He's been doing that for election after election in the States. I would have been over in America in previous occasions reporting on U.S. elections, and he's been a regular feature of it. And he really brings it all together and makes a lot of sense. You know, he's their sort of David McCullough. You know,
yes.
David does the same sort of thing for our
amazing
our,
brain,
our election coverage.
An amazing brain,
yeah.
And I don't know what age the man is, but I'm imagining he's about you know, your age, maybe a bit older, is he? And
And
his command of the technology, not saying that as you get older you shouldn't be in command of technology, but his command of the technology is something to behold.
Well,
isn't
it's the numbers. It's to be able to process these numbers and to keep them coming and to have the confidence. A lot of broadcasting is about, you know, knowing that you can get into this and, you know, I've done the work, I've done the preparation, I've done the research, and I can confidently say the following things.
Yes.
And that, I'd say, like a lot of people, I'd say he does a lot of prep.
Yeah. Mm. I'm addicted to CNN at the moment too. Love Brian Dobson to bits, says Mags and Dundrum. And I saw Brian many years ago in Super Quinn and Kimmage.
In the car, on the train, Super Quinn on my bike.
You're in the Jetta with the bike on the top and a laptop on your lap. No, I saw Brian in Drumshambo. Lovely, friendly man. So that's up in Leitrim.
Yeah, that's a lovely part of the world.
You see, if you were there or not. So were you there? You were there.
Oh, I know. Definitely I was there.
Yeah, definitely. They're getting better now. I love this. Sorry, I'm keeping you on. Tell Brian I sold his shoes for charity and I was amazed how big feet he had.
That I've completely forgotten. I donated my shoes to charity.
You did.
Why would somebody buy secondhand shoes off somebody?
I don't know. It's a charity thing.
A worthwhile charity. Yeah. I've auctioned ties for charity and various things like
how
that.
How many ties have you got?
Well, actually, I've been culling them over recent times because I don't wear ties so much.
Oh,
anymore.
On radio, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
I'm a little more. I'm afraid my standards have slipped. Particularly, Maureen Ireland is on television, is on the news channel, but the News at One isn't. So I'm entirely invisible on the radio at lunchtime. So
right.
I've definitely eased back a bit.
It's a hoodie and a baseball hat.
Yeah, no, I haven't gone that low yet. Well, I'm sure you can get very smart hoodies and
yes, you can. No, but here's somebody. Would he be tempted to present the news in a tracksuit when he's at home? Says that person.
No, actually, and I kind of put on a decent shirt and a reasonably smart pair of trousers. And actually, on Morning Ireland, I would have had the same because I kind of feel if I dress for the job, I'm sort of halfway there.
Yes,
you know.
Yes,
that applies at home as well. Yeah,
you feel important then, and then
I think it sort of gets your head in the right space.
I'm studying television journalism at the moment, and I said on my first evening on the course that I hope to one day be the next Brian Dobson. There'll be some shoes to fill. Size 13, John. That's John in Wexford.
Well, I think the best advice I give to anybody who wants to get into journalism is follow your own path.
Yes.
You know, be your own reporter, person. Your own person in something.
Okay, final question from one of our texters. What was your most awkward interview?
Oh, my most awkward interview. I'm stumped by that.
Are you?
I'm the most awkward.
Because you would have to do confrontational things where you'd have politicians who you have to bring to task on
but
certain
you see,
things.
If I can let you in a secret, you know that doesn't feel awkward. Usually.
Oh right, okay, right, okay, yeah, because that's your job.
Well, that's the kind of the job. I cannot think of I can think of lots of interviews I did, but I cannot think of one that would qualify as awkward.
Right. You sound like a man who's on top of your brief, and of course
I'm not saying that.
You are, obviously, always. I saw Brian in the Hertz rented car on the South Circular Road. We're playing 6 degrees of Brian Dobson here. I saw Brian in K Cafe and I rang his doorbell once, wrong house, but he was very nice. Hopefully you weren't on air. Okay, Brian Dobson, it's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Great to talk to you too.
Good luck in the... on.
No, I was just going to say good luck on Sunday.
Oh, yes. Everyone's saying good luck. And I go, do I need luck? Yeah, I suppose I do. I suppose I do. And good luck on the lunchtime news as well.
Thank you so much.
And mind yourself. Have a great weekend. Thanks, Brian. Thank you.
You too. Bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.